Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The Microsoft IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. All right, Scott, here we are on a Wednesday recording episode 75.
Yeah, we're back.
I know, three quarters of the way to 100. I feel like we're supposed to do something special for episode 100 because that's what everybody does, but I got no ideas.
You'll figure it out. You got tons of time.
We've got like 6 months left.
I'm here to support you.
Thanks. That makes me feel so much better.
Yeah, you know, well, I'm glad we all laugh about that.
Yeah. Anyways, our last episode that we recorded 4 days ago, we were lamenting the disappearance of the Office 365 service descriptions. Apparently, they're sort of coming back.
Now we can celebrate their reappearance. I hate when they do stuff like that. Like, oh, we broke a page and it randomly moved. And like, it's been there forever. This is not hard to do. You can make this happen. But yeah, everybody can go to office365sd.com and that will redirect you to the service description once again. You will not be taken back to the product page.
Yeah, which is kind of funny considering that the episode where we lamented the disappearance hasn't even been published yet. So nobody's actually heard that we even lamented the disappearance. They're going to hear it. They're going to be back. They're going to be like, these guys are crazy. I don't know.
You know, it's just a sense of inception that we like to give everyone.
Yeah. Although you said they're not back for everybody. Did you say it was like a DNS issue or something? I know DNS is...
I don't know what it was. Yeah. I mean, it seemed like it was a redirect straight from TechNet, but who knows? Let's move on since they're back.
We don't need to talk about them anymore. So we decided we would do part two of Office 365 security since we just kind of scratched the surface, dove into a little bit about it in the last episode, and we still had more we wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So I got one for you before we get into this, though, because this is a fun one, and I just saw it this morning,
actually. Is it more gators? Alligators in Florida?
No. Well, I mean, there's all these no-see-ums, and they keep, like, bug bites are horrible. Anyway, So there used to be a thing on GitHub that Microsoft published for building your config XML for Office. So I don't know if you remember that, but they used to have like a web-based tool.
Yeah, for the ODT. The ODT tool, right? Yep.
So they've stopped developing that tool on GitHub. Like there's no more contributions to the repo or anything like that. But if you go to config.office.com, it actually brings up the like official preview of the tool and everything that they have going on there. So they took all that awesome stuff that was going on GitHub and was just kind of being open sourced. And now you can actually come in a semi-official sort of way, albeit in preview, and go ahead and create those config XML files.
Nice. So this is a little bit of a change too, because originally it used to be ODT for Click to Run, which was the Office deployment tool, which it actually references in there. And the OCT, which was the Office customization tool, was for the traditional MSI. It looks like they're rolling them together now. So we have Office customization tool for Click to Run and the Office customization tool for MSIs.
No, I think that's just somebody being stupid in the product group that doesn't know how to name things. Like it's still for ODT and it's still building the XML file for ODT. Like that's people with heads in their sand. They probably forgot there was a thing called OCT, but you know, who can fault them? It's only their own product. How would they know?
I did not say that. That was Scott, if anybody from Microsoft is listening.
I said it. They can call me. I can help them figure out their naming conventions. That's not a problem.
And it's too bad this isn't still in GitHub, or we could just go in and make the change for them.
Yeah, turns out you can't do that anymore. But if you are messing with Office click-to-run deployments, and you're in Office 365, so you should absolutely be doing both those things, and you want to customize your Office installations, which you probably most likely absolutely should, unless you're like the smallest of the small SMBs or kind of one-offs, yeah, go to config.office.com and start generating or fixing up your existing config XMLs.
It's interesting, if you do click over to the documentation for it, in docs.microsoft.com, it still does talk about the Office customization tool. I wonder if they did rename the Office deployment tool, or if, I don't know, maybe the two names are interchangeable now.
It's all in preview.
All right. Oh, speaking of, I'm going to go off on another. This is sort of related to security. Did you see that the Power BI app package for the content adoption pack actually got GA'd and renamed, finally?
It did. It got a little bit of an update. So everybody go ahead and redeploy. Have fun.
Yes. Redeploy. Now it's no longer I think they actually didn't rename it to I'm completely blanking. I can't remember what they renamed it to, but it's not the content adoption pack anymore. Now it's, I think it is usage analytics. I'll have to find it. We can post it in the show notes. There was a tweet out there about it that it got GA'd and renamed. So yeah, that was another fun bit of news that they've been saying they were going to do that for almost a year and almost 2 years now. That got announced. No, a year, right? Last September. Yeah, it was last September when we talked about that was going to get renamed and GA'd and all of that at Ignite. And 2 months before Ignite, they finally got it done.
Yeah, it's still early 2018, right? I mean, we're pretty close to that.
Well, no, it's not even early fiscal year for them, because is this the start of their 2019 fiscal year? I don't know how they do their fiscal years. If they even if they even put years to them, since they go June to July or July to June.
Yeah, it is Microsoft 365 Usage Analytics.
All right.
Which is also available to GCC customers. So all those GovCloud customers can get in on this fun too, along with Microsoft Teams. Yay!
Yes, which I got closer to our whole security topic than you did with the Office customization tool, because that usage analytics can be used for a little bit of security-ish stuff. You can get a good idea of what's going on in your environment. So yeah, go check it out. Anyways, back to more actual security-centric stuff. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with Secure Score, because I think that one's kind of misunderstood.
Yeah. Definitely. So Secure Score, what is it?
Well, it's a score that helps you be secure, of course. I mean, that's what it's named.
No, that was so insightful.
I know. Well, you know, back to bashing product namings, right? So there's really not much in Secure Score that proactively makes you secure. It gives you a sense of things that you may or may not be able to do within your Office 365 tenancy, and gives you a score for your tenant, and also can compare you against other tenancies that are similar to yours, maybe in size, deployments, licensing, things like that. So what you do is you go to securescore.office.com, and the service, once you've signed in, it's going to take a look at the Office 365 services that you consume. So you consume SharePoint, Exchange, OneDrive, which is SharePoint, you know, whatever it happens to be. And then it goes ahead and looks at your settings for those services and compares them to a baseline of what Microsoft considers to be best security practices or best practices. So best practices is a highly loaded term. What's best for one organization may not be best for yours. So don't worry about it when you go in and your score is like 50 out of 300. That's okay. It might turn out that 50 out of 300 is okay for you, because the Secure Score tool is going to come back and it's going to recommend some things. It's going to say, hey, make sure you enable MFA for all your users. Well, if you're not licensed for MFA for all your users, or it's something that you've been thinking about or noodling about, but you didn't want to pay for it because there was an additional cost associated with it, you might not really care, right? Or you might not need it, or whatever it happens to be. So you have to weigh kind of each one of these assessments as they come back. So there's lots of things in there that'll make sense. Things like enable MFA for your tenant admins. Hey, that's a great thing to do. When you're looking at stuff like Exchange, it'll tell you, make sure you enable an outbound spam policy, which you should absolutely be doing. It'll have things like enable an inbound spam policy. Well, if you're not paying for EOP, again, that might be a little hard for you to do, figure out and push your way around. Because really all the tool is telling you is, we looked at a setting and we've said this thing is set this way. We think it should be set this other way. One of my big gripes with this tool is, like I said, everything that it comes back with tends to be one of those additive, this might be something that costs you more money kinds of things. I actually wish they broke it out that way and they said, hey, here's what you pay for today, and here's how you could be as secure as humanly possible under what you pay for today, and then here's all the additive things, and here's why there's a benefit to you to go ahead and rationalize and put some justification around those costs.
Yep, absolutely. And like you said, it's not going to go in and do a bunch of the security stuff, but it does give you that nice snapshot. You can take a look at it and even get ideas. If you haven't, especially if you're a small company, maybe you haven't done a ton of security stuff before. You're one of those smaller 25, 30 person companies and you want to say, hey, what are some things that I should maybe be thinking about? It gives you that nice checklist of, hey, you should probably turn on MFA. Other things like, I saw one in here where you block anonymous calendar sharing. Maybe you need it for some reason, maybe you don't, but there's everything in there, like you said, that ranges from turn on MFA, absolutely do it, to some of these where there's one in here that I see in mine, do not allow mailbox delegation. Well, sometimes, especially if you have an admin, you need to do mailbox delegation.
you might have to, yeah. Yeah, weigh the rules out, right? So they're an assessment, and it's based on somebody else's rule set, not your own. It will most likely call out some things and make you go, huh, I never thought of that. That's a great idea. Some other things you will look at and you go, huh, I never thought of that, but that's a dumb idea, or I don't want to do that. So don't do it. You don't have to. It's okay. The only thing that I don't like about that tool is you can't adjust the rule set today. So like if I go in as a tenant admin and I go, wow, our score is 75 out of 273. I can't go and show that to my boss because my boss would go, oh, why are we only at 75 out of, whatever? We should be at 273. Arguably, maybe, kind of, sort of. See, you have to weigh all that stuff out and really see where it lands. But it's definitely a tool in the toolbox, and it can identify really quick hits and really quick things that you may be able to do to improve your security posture, particularly with user accounts and then some of the more core services. Exchange and SharePoint are the two big ones that always seem to pop up in there for me.
Yep. And if you do need to share something to that, compare your score can kind of give you a little bit of perspective. For instance, like in mine, I'm sitting at like 150 out of, it says 150 out of 364. The max score I could get up to is 450. But I go in and compare my score. I'm at 150. Companies that are my size, 1 to 5 seats, their average score is like 28. It matches up industry type. Industry type is 62. Office 365, the average score, it says in mine, of Office 365 is 31. So I'm feeling pretty good about my 150 right now. And I have never actually seen anybody hit the full 450 or whatever that max score for security actually is. If you have a tenant that has that, talk to us because I'd love to see it.
No, well, that number is always going to be variable. So, like going into like a demo E5 tenant, the max score that I can have in there is 364. But just in its default state with a couple of users and really nothing configured, it sits at 79. Probably some things that could be done to figure that out and push it around and get it to where it needs to be. But the really cool thing about this is if you do go down this path and you do decide to use it, you make some tweaks, you wait a little bit of time for the engine to run again and figure out, hey, here's my new settings. You can actually go back and do comparisons over time. So like if you're in the United States and you're used to something like a credit score where you can watch it, kind of go up and down and blip as, oh, I had a hard check, so my score went down, things like that. You can very much do the same thing with this tool. So there is an analyzer that's built into it where you can go and look at scores over, the last 7 days, last 30 days, last couple months. You can do score comparisons, exports, whatever it happens to be. And then go in and take a look at that specific guidance. It does give you links as well for all of those things. So say you're trying to do MFA for your users, it'll tell you what the threats are that are associated with it and then have a quick link to go ahead and just hit, like the update button, and it'll just launch you straight out to Azure AD to be able to go ahead and make those changes and push things to where they need to be.
All right. Sounds good. So another one that I just wanted to mention, again, this is another one kind of in the same vein of making yourself aware of what's out there, how things are secured. The Microsoft Trust Center also has some documentation, some resources around securing your environment. And there is, we'll put a link to this one in the show notes because it's not nearly as short as the SecureScore one. But it talks about Office 365 security out there, securing your identity. Just a few bullets, some documentation around how you can secure identity, securing apps and data, infrastructure security. So we don't need to spend a ton of time talking on this, but another one of those resources, if you're really looking to double down on security, just make yourself aware of what's possible, what's out there, how security works, some of the things Microsoft does around it. The Trust Center and the Office 365 Security in the Trust Center is another one of those good resources to go check out.
Yeah, everyone should be visiting the Trust Center anyway, just to understand kind of how the service works and what they've agreed to purchase and all that good stuff. But they do have a bunch of baseline guidance out there. A lot of that is going to be how, in that case, how Microsoft secures their data centers. And that's always good to know, right? Because you're going to have to explain that to people along the way. And then it will walk you through things like you said, MFA, securing your apps and data. Ultimately, a lot of that stuff or the information that's coming out of there, it's going to be the same kinds of things that are going to bleed you right back into a tool like SecureScore, because it's doing the same thing, but it's taking a look at your actual settings and then giving you the links back out and all that good stuff.
Yep. So another one.
Another one? I got one for you because you didn't put it in the notes, but it's an actual like security thing. I'm surprised you didn't have it in there. So for customers that are licensed for it, there's this thing called the Attack Simulator, which is part of the Office 365 Threat Intelligence Suite, which is part of E5s or available as an add-on. Clear as mud, right? But there's this thing called the Attack Simulator in there. And what this is based on is allowing you as a tenant admin to go ahead and execute specific types of attacks in a targeted manner against your own environments. So there's a lot of things that go on in the world, like phishing or password brute force kind of things that just come up over time where, hey, you know, maybe we want to train our users on how to avoid being spearfished. Well, that'd be great, right? I had you go out to the LMS and, you know, Ben watched the video and he clicked on it. But 30 seconds later, Ben also clicked on the phishing email and he was compromised and it led to all this other stuff in the environment, right? Not good. So what this tool lets you do is say you're doing like a spear phishing thing, you can actually configure a test to do a credential harvest. And then you can go ahead and spam your own users and see what they've actually done with it and follow up with them. So you can make sure that they're doing things the way they need to be done. You can configure your own campaigns, push things out, and effectively, like I said, spam your own organization, but all to really improve your posture through like active learning and active use of some of these tools that might be available to you. Now, that's not all the Attack Simulator does. It also does password sprays. So you can do a password spray attack against your own organization, and you can also simulate brute force password attacks as well today, which is super cool.
It is. And you're right. I should have put this in the show notes. You can slap my hand later.
No, I wasn't trying to like make you feel bad.
Make me feel bad. I'm gonna start crying again. I cried last episode over service descriptions. No, definitely use this. Liam Cleary actually wrote 3 different blog posts too on running these attacks, the brute force, the spear phishing, and the password spray attack. So we can link up to those in the show notes. He wrote an article for each one of those on his blog. So kind of walking you through it, what those different attacks are, how you run them in the Office 365 or in the Security and Compliance Center. Yeah, this is a really nice tool. Microsoft came out with it, I don't know, maybe it was 4-5 months ago. I think I first saw it announced, maybe even have been sooner. But definitely another one of those tools to help you make sure your environment is secure and your users are behaving themselves.
Always good to have well-behaved users.
Yes, they are your biggest security vulnerability.
Yes, if only we could get rid of them.
I know. My environment would be so secure if I didn't have any users in it. So another one that is, this is still in public preview, is the ability to start blocking legacy authentication in Office 365. There's definitely some conditions around this one about when you can block legacy auth, but with the push towards modern auth, with everything starting to support modern authentication, Exchange, SharePoint, even from an end user devices, iOS, if you're using even the native mail app now with Office 365, it will work with modern auth. If you guys can get away with disabling legacy auth and you have everything on modern auth, definitely do it. And there's a blog post out here where it's actually leveraging Azure AD conditional access support for blocking.
I was going to say that that's important to call out. So it is using that additive feature.
Yes. Going back to not everything is always free and included with every plan. It is Azure AD conditional access that is leveraged to block legacy auth. It's not just one of those you can go in and say, disable legacy auth on Exchange Online. You're using conditional access to do it.
Yeah, so the cool thing about this one is it runs all through the client apps control. So client apps has things in it like just browser, right? Like, let's go ahead and figure what those are. And then you can do mobile apps and desktop clients. So that's broken into three categories. So modern auth clients. So like you said, you could just force straight up modern auth, or you could do, you know, challenges or blocks for other things. So the other two are Exchange Active Sync, which is really one of those kind of sweet areas that people like to target. So yeah, you could go ahead and turn that one off if you want to. And then there's this magical checkbox, which is other clients. So other clients is going to be all your older Office clients that don't support modern authentication, and clients that use mail protocols that aren't modern auth as well. So that would be POP, IMAP, SMTP, all that kind of stuff. So it's one checkbox that kind of does it all to push it through from the policy side. So now we're back to that zero trust network, identity as a firewall thing. Life's good. We've blocked the authentication. So we don't even need to worry about authorization or things like that because the client can't actually get through.
Like we said, it's using Azure AD conditional access. There's a whole bunch more too you can do with conditional access from a security standpoint. Before we dive into that, this is, like we mentioned, it's one of those things that requires some extra licensing. You are going to probably want to just go ahead and get the EMS suite if you want to start leveraging all the conditional access. You get a lot more in EMS. And I think, is this an EMS E3 and E5?
It might just be E5. I'm sure, because those tie back to different like P1 and P2 SKUs.
Okay, so conditional access is E3 and E5, but there's some additional conditional access stuff you get with E5, like the risk-based conditional access. We can talk about that, but essentially conditional access, like we said, you can block clients, but you can also do things like blocking based on location. So I have a client where they're like, you know what, we want people to be able to use desktops, connect to all the services when they're on our network. But when they go home, we only want them to be able to use the browser. So maybe they can't install Outlook on their home PC and connect to Office 365 and pull all the mail down. So they've done some things with location-based where, hey, if you're coming from an IP address that is a corporate IP address, you're on VPN, you're in the office, full access to everything in Office 365. If you go home and it's not from one of these known IP addresses, one of our corporate IP addresses, you're going to only get browser-based access to those Office 365 services. So you can do things like that with conditional access. There is a lot more you can do besides just this legacy auth blocking. If you leverage some of those EMS suites, the conditional access, those features.
I tend to think of things like conditional access is starting to give you some of those abilities you might have had with like split brain DNS and ADFS. So being able to do different authentication flows based on where you come from, and not necessarily flows, but maybe challenges or paths that you'll take a user down. So like you said, maybe we block a browser when somebody's at home. One of the other big ones that I've seen used a bunch is you'll do MFA for off-prem and you won't require MFA challenges when you're on-prem or you're VPN'd in. So for these clients that do support modern auth, you know, that works out really nicely. So I can have you go home and it's a condition. So you don't always have to MFA, but you only have to MFA when you're doing this thing or you're coming from this place or this condition is fired. So if this, now we do this or we deny this and push it through. If you're worried about things like spear phishing, or having targeted attacks against your organization, or specific users in your organization. Remember, we're talking about a per-user entitlement and licensing construct inside of conditional access. So there are things that you can do. Say you're really worried about your executives in your organization being phished, and you're always seeing people logging in from Nigeria and New York City at the same time, or trying to log in from both. You could actually make it so that, you know, your CEO is protected, he's sitting in New York City, life's good, everything's great, he never gets an MFA challenge, and only that risky sign-in, so that's the risk-based stuff. When I see a sign-in from over here, like sign-in from two locations at the same time, let me challenge the one that looks really weird and MFA that one, and make sure that everything just looks the way it needs to do, and it's on the up and up across the board.
They just keep adding more and more to this too. I just went in and was looking at it, and even with conditional access policies now, what you can get to and what you can't, it used to be just user-based, where you could say, hey, this group of users or these users is this conditional access policy applies to it. They've given you some more options now where you can say, hey, this conditional access policy, it's in preview yet, but it applies to all guest users. So those external users that you've invited, they're in your Azure B2B directory, or guest users to Teams or Groups or SharePoint, have one set of conditional policies that just apply to all your guest users. Another one they added in preview now is directory roles. So you can say something like all my Exchange admins. Maybe you can only access the admin center, again, if you're on-prem. So if you're an Exchange admin, if that's your role, we're only going to allow you access to Office 365 if you're on our corporate network. Maybe you do that for global admins. They have a list of probably 20 different roles here. Guest inviter, security admin, security reader, your Skype admin, user admin, Intune admins, Dynamics 365 admins. So they continue to improve on this and that functionality that they give you within the conditional access policies.
I'm a big fan of it. There's a what if tool in there. So that they introduced that. So you do have the ability to test these before you make them live and potentially wreck some days and do some things that you didn't intend to do. One of the other things, so you mentioned external users and being able to make them do the same types of things. This happens a lot. Like I see this working with Microsoft as an external user. My org account from an external entity, when I'm invited into like a SharePoint site at Microsoft, I have to do MFA for that account, which is really cool. You didn't used to be able to do that. So they've added those capabilities. There are licensing constructs that come into play there. So I'll put a link in the show notes, which everyone can find at mscloudITpropodcast.com/episode75, where we'll have a link to the licensing guidance for B2B collaboration. So there are some rules in there about, depending on what happens, typically it's like a 5-to-1 ratio. So if I buy I bought that EMS license for you, Ben, and that came with, you know, the risk-based sign-on and all those kinds of things, and now I have 5 licenses to use for B2B users and be able to run those around as well. And then Microsoft does all the kind of licensing and true up and calculation for that on their end. So there's nothing magical for you to do to go out and figure that out.
Good to know. All the licensing gotchas. I know we've said it before, but licensing used to be easy in Office 365.
Did you know about the 5-to-1 thing? This was new to me. I had never really seen this one before, but it came up. I forget how it came up. It came up in something that I was talking to somebody about, and they're like, oh yeah, 5-to-1. I was like, wait, really? So where is that? Oh, and it turns out there's actually an article on B2B licensing now. It actually walks you through some pretty concrete examples of, you know, I want to invite this many users and I have this many internally and I have this many internal licenses. How many external users does that give me? And what has to happen?
You know, I kind of remember reading that somewhere. I think I was looking at it for one of my other clients, and when you mentioned it, it rings a bell, but I would have never come up with it off the top of my head. So I don't know if it says anything in there or not. Have you looked? What happens? So for instance, me, I'm one user. I could very easily end up with more than 5 external users with all of my clients. Can you buy more, or do you actually have to purchase internal licenses just to get an additional 5?
You have to purchase additional licenses.
Okay. But you have to purchase internal ones. You can't buy like just B2B licenses.
Correct. Yeah. And there's nothing for there's no need to actually assign licenses to B2B accounts. It's purely based on that 5-to-1 ratio. So licensing is automatically calculated and reported on the back end on the Microsoft side. If you go over it, say you had that 5-to-1, so you have 10 internal users, which means, you know, you can invite 50 externals. Well, if you invite 60 externals and you're using that feature functionality, well, somebody at Microsoft might eventually come back and say, you need to buy some more licenses, right? You need to go out and buy, you know, a couple more of these to get yourself aligned to where you need to be.
So I'm going to have to think about this and look at this some more, because every time you share a site now with an external user, they get added in the B2B, right?
They do, but we're talking about capabilities in Azure AD.
Okay, so this is just the Azure AD, not necessarily sharing.
This is for anything where you want to provide access to paid Azure AD features.
Okay, got it.
You have to have coverage for the appropriate Azure AD license for the paid feature to bring that across. If you're just a B2B user and you don't need MFA on your B2B accounts in your directory, that's fine. They just show up and they're just Azure AD freeze.
Then this doesn't apply. Okay, got it.
Doesn't apply there. It's just for paid features, yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I think that about wraps up most of the security stuff.
Most of it.
Most of it. We could keep going with this. How many parts do you think we could get?
Too many.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure we'll come back and talk about more security stuff as they continue to add more and improve on stuff and grow stuff. But yeah, for now, we can call this one a wrap.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Scott. We'll talk to you later. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.